All right. I'm going to start out just telling you a little bit about who we are and what we do. And then, yeah, we heard that there are a lot of parents in this group.
Who's a parent? Who has kids like between the age of like 5 and 10? Okay, who has like
11
pubescent teenager kind of like, yeah?
I'm just gonna leave my hand.
That's right. So like, you know, 11 to 15. Yep. Anybody like 15 to 18? Y'all still going? You still going?
All three. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. Okay.
Got it all. All
right.
All of them.
What's up? Anybody got a kid older than 18?
Well, yes.
Very good.
Dr. Brown. Very good.
All right. Yeah.
So we work for Young Life in Munich, Germany. Young Life exists to share Jesus, introduce adolescents to Jesus Christ, and help them grow in their faith. And so we specialize in adolescents, and that's from 11-ish, it keeps getting earlier, it's like, and later. So yeah. Right now it's like 11-ish to 24-ish that we kind of see as, honestly, adolescent culture. And adolescence is defined as that the period of between childhood and adulthood where you're figuring out, who am I, do I matter, where do I fit in the world, essentially, are the primary questions of adolescence that all of us are asking those questions probably all the time to a later, lesser or greater extent, but that's the really intense kind of work of adolescence.
Which is why we feel like it's such a strategic point in a person's development to get to walk alongside with them and talk about this God that loves us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have three different teams in Munich that we work with that span that span of adolescence. So we have a middle school-ish ministry with the younger, like 10, 11 to 14, 15-year-olds. We have been in a Christian private school for almost a decade where the majority, like a good 80 to 90% of the kids that go there come from non-believing families. But the school administration are believers and the teachers are all believers. So we have a welcome open door there. We staff, like we hired their social worker, we staff their after school program, and they allow us to have volunteer leaders who can be on campus and meet kids and hang out with them there. From that, we've grown into hanging out with students in that whole neighborhood in Munich. So the public school around the corner from this Christian school that we've been in, we've just recently really gotten to know a lot of kids there. And that school has a mostly immigrant Muslim population. So it's like close to 95% Muslim families in that school. So we reach out to teenagers in that whole neighborhood. So, and it's a funny mix because at the private school, you've got more affluent, more German kind of kids and then the kind of immigrant Muslim culture there. So that's the biggest piece of what we have going on in Munich. And we have a full-time staff person, Nikki, who we've known as long as we've been there, and he leads that ministry. Then we have an exchange program where we send high school German students to America to live with a Christian family for a year and go to high school in America and experience the whole, like, movie American high school culture. And that is both an outreach and a leadership development for us. Non-believing kids go and live with a Christian family for a year, and that's very much more intense and different than what they're going to get anywhere else. And they're often more open to a different faith when they're in a different culture, because they're already open to experiencing new things and new attitudes. And we also send Christians who often experienced a faith that is maybe more dead, maybe there's probably no youth group in their church where they grew up and things like that, and come to the States and experience bigger churches, youth groups, things like that, that can also change their faith to a large degree. And most of our really amazing volunteer leaders and staff members were post-Amica students that did this program before. So another German staff member that we have in Munich was also an Amica student, and now she's heading up like the discipleship process going into the year in the States and then the discipleship and follow-up process afterwards in our whole region in Germany. And then through that, we're trying to figure out how to meet more high school-age students. So those kind of our high school ministry and our exchange program ministry kind of go together. And then Ryan heads up our university outreach ministry, which is what we went over to do in the first place about 9 years ago, and then we ended up taking over all these other things, and now we're kind of, Ryan's moving back over into just focusing on how do we figure out this university outreach piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we do. So we have a team of about 15 or so volunteer leaders in Munich that work on those three different teams. We have a committee of adults that help out in the background with designing our website and raising money and different things like that in the background.
Celebrating our volunteer leaders.
Helping out, celebrating our volunteer leaders and that kind of thing. So we have, our job has essentially been building up this team of people that do this work with us and training and developing and that kind of thing. So our hope is to pass all of that over to some of our German young leaders one day, and maybe go start somewhere else. So, that's what we do. We're invited to talk about, or we offered to talk about adolescent culture in this class today with parents. Yeah.
We don't have adolescent kids.
We're not there yet, personally, but as parents. We have little kids.
Yeah, most of us aren't either, obviously.
Right? So, mm-hmm. Preparation.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah, but that's kind of our, because Young Life focuses on pure, only adolescents, and we're pretty intent on that. We're not going to do a marriage ministry. We're not going to hang out with five-year-olds. Because our specialty is that period of adolescence. So we took a lot of classes on adolescent culture and things like that in our training on Young Life staff, and it's been incredibly helpful.
Yeah.
So.
Turns out they're complicated.
Turns out that there's some things to know.
Who knew?
Who knew? Yeah. Teenagers, odd specimens.
Sorry, I heard a stat day before yesterday with a girlfriend that's on staff with Crew and works with high school ministries. It's very much like their version of Young Life, I think.
Yeah.
And she said 86% of humans come to faith if they're going to.
Yes.
At that stage.
Right.
Yes.
Right?
During adolescence.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you.
Huge percentage.
That's where we want to be. We want to be investing there. Yeah. Definitely in other places too. But let's make sure we hit that. As the body of Christ, let's make sure that we are engaging people, God's creation, in that phase of development.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why we really do love that we get to walk alongside people in such a, yes, complicated, yes, kind of crazy, but super, super important development phase of people's
lives. Why don't you start out talking about the history of adolescence?
So, the term that we even use, adolescence, is actually a relatively new development in human history, right? So if you kind of think of, let's go back 200-300 years and think about how families developed, how did children go from being children to being adults? You grow up in a family scenario or setting where maybe you guys all work as farmers together, or you are in a family that has a very specific trade that they do in maybe a more urban setting. But that line between childhood and adulthood is really, it's pretty quick, and it's not as sectioned off, and you're doing it with your family the entire time. I mean, you're going to live in this house together. As soon as you can pick up a fork or a shovel or whatever, you're going to be working. You're going to be part of the family trade. You're going to be doing that together. And there's this beautiful, like, apprenticeship built into just being a family member. Because you're going to invest in that trade. You're going to learn how to become an adult, how to do that work, how to make a living, how to feed yourself and a family that you'd have to support very naturally just by watching and doing. Yeah. And then the Industrial Revolution happens, right? And so parents now go outside of the home to work. And then we have to figure out, okay, what are we going to do with kids? Mm-hmm. Where are they going to be? And then we develop more modern systems of education. So we have an education kind of like a standardized way that's outside of the house. And they go to be educated in this other place while parents are outside of the house working there. And they come home and their overlap time gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And even since we were adolescents, just 15 years ago, 10 years ago, it's even smaller now than it was then. This overlap time between where a becoming adult gets to be spend time with adults showing them how to be adults.
Mm-hmm.
And in the education system that we have, they are inherently pulled out of that world of learning to be an adult to learn knowledge and facts about a lot of things, mm-hmm. But their time just learning how to be an adult person mm-hmm. is more and more minimized, and their schedule's filled with a lot of other things.
So none of this is good or bad. It's right. just the reality of the world that we live in has changed the way humans mm-hmm. develop, essentially. Mm-hmm. That it's no longer we grow into an adulthood by always just being with adults and watching what they do. Now they're kind of segregated portions of society. Kids are together, adolescents are together, adults are together, and there's not as much overlap there, which is part of why adolescence keeps getting longer and longer.
Yeah. We're going to talk about abandonment was the next
yes,
thing?
Yes, abandonment. So there's, mm-hmm. if I can give one recommendation, there's an author named Chap Clark that any book that you find of his, if you're interested in this, is excellent. He wrote a book called Hurt that we read when we were first starting Young Life staff, and now he's written a couple more since then. I think there's like Hurt 2 and maybe something else. But one of the main things that he talks about in adolescent culture today is that essentially teenagers have, because of the reality of our society and that now they are kind of sectioned off into different portions of the world, that they're not together with adults so much time, really, literally, there's this feeling of abandonment that is kind of inherent in adolescent culture. And that part of that comes from just a world where every interaction they have with an adult, something is required of them. So if you think about in school, they're being asked to learn and perform. And again, it's not a bad thing. Kids need to learn and perform. But then they're in sports classes where they're trying to perform, and sports has gotten more and more competitive and performance-based and less kind of community-based and things like that. And they're kind of often so sequestered off into their own world and culture that has left them often feeling like there's no one in the world, there's not an adult in my life that only cares about me for my sake. Everywhere that I go, something is expected of me for me to be loved. And that has led to this, what Chap Clark calls this culture of abandonment. Do you have something to add to that?
No.
Yeah, so that's kind of the basis a little bit of where they are. And what Chap talks about a lot is this, because of that, and because of the brain development that's happening in adolescence, because what we've learned, even just in the last 10 years, so much science has come out and what's happening in the brain during this time period. And they really, if you feel like sometimes a teenager is acting like a toddler again, literally their brains are acting like toddlers again. They're going through this brain transition where their brain is going back through the stages of development. And so it's this kind of like perfect storm of craziness, you know, that we see, and that seems to happen there. But they're in this weird mix of they have more responsibility, they have a lot of pressure on teenagers today. Just recently a study came out that said like physiologically, teenagers have the same amount of stress as a 40-year-old. But at the same time, we don't respect that as adults. We kind of blow it off and say, oh, your life is easy. But really, their brains are incredibly stressed because of the world that they live in. And so they have this intense kind of pressure in school and in whatever they're involved in. And they have, you know, their brains are still going through development again. And then at the same time, yeah, it's that juxtaposition of, now I'm driving maybe, I'm entering kind of sexual relationships often, but my brain kind of acts like a 4-year-old sometimes. And so that's where you have that's why this time period is so important and so key, because that's kind of a dangerous combination, if you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, if you feel like parenting an adolescent is like you're taking crazy pills and mm-hmm. that they are too, you're right. That's what's happening. And we have, because of the way, talking about that history of adolescence mm-hmm. and the formation of that segment of society at all, there's just not as many natural anchor points mm-hmm. around them and not as much understanding from from adult culture that's also segregated mm-hmm. off from them, to understand how to walk with them mm-hmm. through that. It's an incredibly challenging job for a parent. Mm-hmm. It's really, really hard. And so, like, as people that aren't parents of adolescents, we just want to say, like, for those of you that are there, mm-hmm. God bless you. Like, it's really challenging. And know that, like, hey, there's a lot of things that parents are going to do wrong. Like, raise your hand if you haven't some way been injured by your parents. You know, like, we all have. I'm her husband. but it is hard and confusing work. And sometimes you're just trying to figure out, where's north? Mm-hmm. You know, where's the ground and where's the sky? I'm disoriented. And your kid is too. Mm-hmm. but that's why I wanted to be able to kind of talk about, here's some things that we have learned along mm-hmm. the way that help give some orientation that may be helpful for you as the hero parents that you are. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Wanted to talk about multiple identities also, just to add.
Yeah. Another, just thinking back at it and what we've learned and what we see in adolescent culture is this idea, and you probably all see this too, of them having multiple identities. Like, at church, I'm this person. At school, I'm this person. At home, I'm this person. And it's something we see in our work with teenagers a lot. So this book that I talk about, Hurt, Chap Clark, the research that he's done, the reason why he's so influential in our understanding of this is because he did this incredibly long, in-depth study where they essentially, like, sent adults into the world of adolescence long enough that they started being honest, like, entered their world long enough and did enough interviews and were just there so long and had so many conversations that then eventually the truth started coming out of what happens in this kind of segregated adolescent culture. And one of the things they found was that what we see as adults as inconsistencies of, you say you're this person when you're at church, but then I see you over here and you're a totally different person, that to a teenager's brain, that's not inconsistent. They're literally trying on different personalities, different identities, and seeing what it's like. And because of where their brain development is, they don't see that doesn't line up with maybe who they say. So it's like, we can often feel like they're lying to us. You know, it's like they say one thing at church and we think that they mean that, but then it seems like you must be lying because you don't live that out over here. But the reality is they're not lying. They really just don't even see the difference. They don't see that they're being a different person here, because it's like, They can't put all that together in their brain in that point of development. So it's one of those things that I feel like is so helpful to know, and to know that that's normal, and to accept kids in that and watch that happen and allow it to play out and interact with that mm-hmm. at the same time. So instead of kind of shunning that, interact with it and kind of see if you can talk through that with them and in relationship more.
Yeah, not only normal, but actually necessary. Necessary to figure out who they are. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
I would say, I find that to be the case for adults, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Often, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
For myself included, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that may not be, I mean, certainly it's part of development, but some of it may just be what they've been modeled
yes.
by their
absolutely.
Broken parents who are
yeah.
going
yeah.
to go beyond all their parents.
Absolutely. The only difference really is cognitively... The only difference really is that cognitively an adult can see the inconsistency, mm-hmm. and an adolescent can't. Like, mm-hmm. truly cannot comprehend that that's
can you
that
give
there's
an
inconsistency.
Example? Are you saying, like, I love Jesus, but I'm going to get wasted at the party? Like, is that what you mean?
Well, that's
certainly
yeah.
an example. Yeah. yeah.
So... Can I just be honest about I'm going to talk about my adolescence because I still remember it and I'm reminded of
teenager.
It. Has no recognition that she just sprung over. And so, but I grew up in a church context. I didn't really like church and I didn't really like church people. And I kind of thought they were all hypocrites and yeah. But I did grow up and I knew what the things to say and I knew that I believed in God and I knew essentially what morality was and should be. But when I found myself in the right group of people, I also felt like it was perfectly acceptable and accepted to get drunk and then go smash mailboxes, you know, outside of my car window with a baseball bat. And then there's other contexts where it's like, okay, I can be like, even really say like, I'm conservative in like the way I feel like the world should work and that sort of thing. But if I'm with a different group of people that feels like they just have contrary values to that, I mean, whether it's political or societal or whatever it is, I can put that on and totally embrace it and really feel like I believe that and not see any kind of contradiction, because who I am, the foundations of my beliefs and my values, they're in flux. Mm-hmm. It does, the foundation's not actually there for me cognitively. So I think that's why you can see people, and this could go into like the clothes they wear. Mm-hmm. Like they'll have different groups of friends in different settings that they will dress and look and act like they have multiple personality disorder, because mm-hmm. they do. But it's not a disorder. But that's the reality of being in that place. Mm-hmm. And I love seeing the nodding heads of parents of adolescents here. Yeah.
I was thinking my own adolescents.
Is that right?
Yeah.
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 But like, can it be even not just like the moral? Like, it's as simple as like, I play sports in the fall, so I'm like total jock mode.
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm
yes.
a theater person in the spring.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I get all artistic and deep
yes.
and all that. Like, it's
that. It
is
that too.
What,
yes.
That was my lucky spot. I mean, I see that in youth as well. Like,
yeah.
Flip-flop.
Yeah.
So it's not even always like,
it's not always
drunk
bad.
Versus the
yeah.
moral.
Yes.
It's not always the morality. It's just, they're mm-hmm. so exploring
exactly.
everything.
Yeah, because how do you know until you've tried out these, if you see these different groups in society and you see these different ways of being and in that period, and like you said, we all do that to an extent too. It's like, okay, I'm going to try out what this way of thinking and see what that feels like, or I'm going to try out this group of friends or this personality or this hobby or that kind of thing, and then see, is this me? Is this what feels like me? So it's natural to an extent. Yeah.
But and then the manifestations of that can be really wildly,
can be more extreme.
Morally and behaviorally, mm-hmm. in ways that seem like dangerous and really scary for us as parents. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're moving into the what helps or what can we do in this world? You want to look at notes?
Yeah, I do. I'm
furiously writing notes this morning.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that we know and that research shows that is important for adolescents is having other adults in their life, other than their parents, who are influential in their life. And preferably, when we talk about that culture of abandonment and feeling like something's always expected of them, that they aren't loved just for who they are, the more we can find adults that love them just for who they are, that is what teenagers need, essentially. And then, again, it was from some study of development and kind of what kids turned out well, in a sense, or what kids kind of survived this period well and were productive and happy and spiritual adults. The number 3 was kind of the most common, or the breaking point, I think they found it. That 3 adults in every teenager's life who are pouring into them outside of their parents is a difference maker. And that's why we do what we do in Young Life. That our whole, everything that we design as far as the way we do ministry, the activities, even in events and camps that we put on, the way we put adults, it's all based around putting adults in the lives of adolescents who will love them for who they are, no matter what. And when we're talking about a faith perspective, a big piece of that is also, even if you don't believe what I believe, we are here to love you no matter what, and part of that is going to be sharing the person of Jesus with you, because we believe that Jesus is the answer to everything that we need. He is the identity that we need that gives us security. He is what brings eternal life. But at the same time saying, but you don't have to believe that. You can choose to not believe that, and I still love you. So there's not this performance-based love with a hitch, or what is the word for that?
A catch. I mean, just the idea that, like, our relationship doesn't stop. If you say, you know what, I've heard it, and I'm just holistically out on this idea of Jesus, mm-hmm. so thanks for your time, but that we say, okay, that's cool.
let's keep hanging out. Let's go get some ice cream. Let's go camping, that sort of thing. So three of the adults that just, that preferably that don't have a, have any expectation or performance need associated with them saying, I'm investing within you, not because what you add to this team, not because of what you add to this choir, or because of what you can do in studies, but I just wanted to get to know you and hang out with you.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can be a coach or a teacher or something like that. If there's an element to that relationship that isn't hanging on that performance, if that makes sense.
But just to connect it up, is like, what do I do as a parent to in any way impact that? What's interesting in kind of like the church traditions that most of us came out of here in Texas, the idea of a godfather or godmother is not super common. But it is in the place that we do ministry, with a more Catholic culture and that sort of thing. Find somebody that you say, I trust this person. They can have a good rapport with my kid, and I know that they're going to really love them and not say dumb, unhelpful things to them. But also, we'll just say like, hey, I'd love to go take your kid out for pizza once a month, or you know, once a quarter, or like, they're into doing some hobby that your kid's really into, like, you know, NASCAR or hunting or whatever. Not to be stereotypical of Texas at all. I'm just saying.
Whatever it happens to be.
Yeah, whatever that happens to be. And say, you know, hey, I'd love to go take your kid and go do that with them on a regular basis. So when we can find those people and give them a vision for doing that, because it's something in our culture that the idea of, like, an adult mentor that's not family, that's not blood, which family and blood, aunts and uncles are great for this, by the way. But it's really kind of an unusual, uncommon thing in our...
But this is something, and I would say I am very grateful to this church that I feel like I did have that growing up. Mm-hmm. And even before I was in the youth group, I very distinctly always remember having older women that kind of took me in and took me out for ice cream and those kinds of things and hung out with me. And I think that did have a huge impact in my life. I'm very grateful for that.
Just realizing that we're running down to like 4 or 5
what's
minutes.
How much time do we have?
No. Well, you got about 15.
We have 15 minutes. We're good.
Unstructured time.
Y'all do all this in German though, right?
We do.
You totally are fluent. You don't talk to them in English?
No.
I mean, sometimes they like us to.
University students.
I do university ministry, so I'll have a lot of students that, but we always engage in German because that's one of those ways to say, you know what? I care about you enough that even though I know you probably understand me just fine in English, your language and the heart language that you grew up in is important to me, and I want to be able to touch that and communicate in that.
Yeah, so then just more family, like what can you do? So your kids need not their parents, but then there's also things that we can do as parents, and we include ourselves in this too. We are parents now. Mm-hmm. That we can also do in our relationships with our kids that helps make it a safer place for them to walk through these stages of development and to include you in that with them. And so one of those things is unstructured time. Making sure that you as a parent, or if you are spending time with other adolescents or kids, finding that unstructured time that you're just hanging out with your kids without expectations. Again, without putting on, hey, I need you to be doing this for me right now. Or even, you know, it's always a fine line. You want to ask your kids about school and find out what they're doing there and those kinds of things. But we also want to give kids time that we can ask them questions about them and not about how they're performing, if that makes sense. So it's not this constant, I have to be this for you. Because the more that they feel like I have to be this for you, they will just put that personality on for you. Right. And that is all you will see. And so making it a safe place for them to be whoever they are in that time and get to know them for who they are is huge.
And just to add to that, I think that we all have this drive with our kids that, especially when they get to that adolescent phase where they stop saying less, they start, you know, just not talking anymore. You're like, I want to know you, I really do, I'm interested, but like, there's just a wall. Like, you're just not saying anything. Monosyllabic answers come to every question, and creating a space where it's okay for them just to be quiet, and for us to just sit in the same space
and maybe enjoy the same things or experience something together. You know, less on the movie side, because that just constant media stimulus is a whole bunch more of, you know, what we're all inundated with all the time. But just to, like, it to be okay to be a quiet place. But then we got some thoughts on how to, so the next thought is that, but we, there's some great ways of getting your kid that's an adolescent to maybe more reserved and not talkative to engage in conversation. And this is something that we found to be super helpful as adults doing ministry with adolescents, is how do we find something that they're an expert on? And then just learn. Say, I just, you get this world of, I don't know if it's computer games or if it's baseball or music or fashion or whatever it is, and just with all the sincerity in the world, without any kind of a belittling view of that, truly engage and try to be interested in what are you the expert on, and how can I just learn about that from you? I just want to take it in. I want to get interested and start asking questions. Like, be an investigator and a learner, because that really starts opening doors of conversations that give you insights into what's going on inside them internally, in their hearts and in their minds. That's not going to come out directly. It's not going to be articulated of like, I feel sad or I feel insecure when, you know, like, that's just not going to come out. It's not going to be articulated. But you get hints of that whenever they start talking about the things that they're passionate about. And then you'll see, like, they come to something, they're excited about it, and then, like, kind of an eye veers off, and you're like, okay, something registered there, something triggered there, and I get to just keep having this conversation to figure out where that's going, what are they thinking about there? But be, like, just get to be patient in that, because you don't have to be experts and counselors and therapists. It's not, you don't have to be that. Just being present and listen in a lot of ways, and you can listen whenever you make them the expert on something.
We wrote down acknowledging their stress. We talked about that a little bit earlier, though, of that respecting what is hard about the phase that they're in. I think it's just easy for us as adults to look back up, because my time of adolescence is very different from adolescence today. And that's why, honestly, reading that book was so eye-opening to me. And we've actually recommended it to some of our younger staff, and they were just like, oh yeah, this describes my adolescence. And I'm like, really? Because it did not describe mine. I don't get that world. But just knowing the world that our kids are growing up in is a different world than we grew up in. And they are incredibly stressed. And partially from the pressure and that kind of thing of school and sports or whatever it is that they're in. And that's certainly true in Germany. The kids, especially in university that we work with, experience way more pressure to perform academically than I ever did.
They are wound so tight.
Holy moly. And I really think we spent years kind of blowing that off. Like, whatever. College life is easy.
You guys
have it.
You know what to do
with. It's no big deal. But we really had to be humbled and recognize to learn to respect the reality that they do live in and stop blowing that off and take it seriously.
And there's a difference between saying, like, yes, your level of responsibility is equivalent with that of a a mother and father of three in a really stressful career, that sort of thing. It's not the same as saying, like, that is the same thing as saying, I know your experience, though. How you feel this, how this impacts you, is not that different. And to take that seriously without, one doesn't equate to the other. Is what I'm trying to say.
Acknowledge that without belittling it.
Yeah.
I'm respecting that.
Down even a little bit younger, just adolescents too.
Yes.
Like here, with public schools, testing has pushed
so
hard. Oh, yeah. Kids are under so much stress from, like, third grade level on up. It's that whole stress to perform.
Yeah.
So I really think that it starts earlier than it used to ever start. Like, because it is very easy for me to say, you've got the easiest job.
Right.
But it's, their childhood was not. Not my childhood.
Yeah, and when you think about just the way our brains work, the stress of pressure to perform in a test physically acts out in our brains the same way that the stress of a bear in front of me does. That's all our brains know is one kind of stress. Our brains don't differentiate between like a social stress or a performance stress or a my life is in danger stress. And so if kids are feeling stressed, no matter what age that is, remembering and recognizing, it's just so easy for us to say, you know, your friend doesn't like you. Okay, you're not going to care about her in a year anyway. But their brains feel like a bear is in front of them. And that feels the same as it does to us if our life is in danger or we're worried that we're not going to be able to feed our kids tomorrow because money is short or whatever it is. No matter how serious it is or not, the way our brains respond is the same. There's only one way chemically our brains know how to do that.
I want to learn from you. So what is the fine line between empathizing mm-hmm. and not belittling, but also mm-hmm. helping them get a grip on reality? Like, I've heard myself saying, Zoe, it's not that bad. Okay, there's no reason to be crying right now. Right. You're not going to be shocked because you didn't do your piano homework. Mm-hmm. Like, this is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And then I'm talking to her like, you're so stupid and you need to get a grip. And I know that's not right.
Sure.
But I also don't want her to become this dramatic,
right.
Oh my God, my piano!
So there has to be a fine line.
That's challenging.
It is so challenging, and especially when it's your own kids. You know, and all of this, it's like, this is so much easier for me to do with the teenagers that I hang out with than with my own kids, uh-huh. you know? So I acknowledge that. but with both them and the teenagers we work with and with Arlie, what I have learned, at least where I am right now, is that it feels counterintuitive to me. But that empathy response is what actually helps them get past the emotions more quickly than trying to get them out of that emotion.
Than the logic.
Yes, the logic. Because emotions don't respond to logic. And so what I've at least at this point in my life found to be most helpful is to figure out, okay, what was the scenario you said?
Piano lessons, and she hasn't done enough of
Gotten her homework done before piano lessons. Take a step back. This is my response. This is my process. Take a step back. When has there been a time when I've been in a scenario like that? I don't do this all the time. This is what I hope to do, what I try to do, what I find to be most effective when I do it. When is a time that I've been in a scenario like that? And I try to step back and then tell my kid, Zoe, do you feel like everything's going to fall apart or that your teacher's not going to love you because you haven't done your homework? You know what? I remember a time, and this is not okay. I remember a time where I didn't do my homework, and when I was your age, or even last week, I didn't get something done for work that needed to get done. And acknowledging to my kid, this is the emotion that I felt then, which then gives them permission to feel that instead of feeling, I think when we try to get them out of that quickly, then not only do I feel that, but now I'm also not supposed to feel that, but I do feel that. So why do I, what's wrong with me, right? Mm-hmm. So being able to acknowledge I feel that way in that situation too. That's a big step. And often, you know, it's like we think if we do that, then it's just gonna grow, but it's actually the opposite. That's when they tend to calm down and realize, oh, that's normal, okay. And then you can kind of talk them through a little bit more. Here's how we move on through that. Because kids don't know that that's normal. They don't know that everybody feels that way in that scenario. And so, you know, they really do feel very quickly like, oh no, I think there's something wrong with me because I'm really freaked out about this. And apparently I'm not supposed to be freaked out about this. And so acknowledging that and even with my four-year-old, when I tell him, you know, there was one time that happened to me too, and I felt that way. Then he'll really start to like ask me, really? And did you cry? Was that sad for you? You know, and it's like they really can come out of that all of a sudden. And so that's what we found. Mm-hmm.
Well, on that note, if you think about that, maybe there wasn't the right preparation so that when you got to that moment that you missed your homework, you were really sad.
Mm-hmm.
It's like too late to fix that response.
Right.
But note it down. I struggle with this a lot too, but write it down and be like, all right, next week, maybe start in my mind thinking about how do I make them not feel so concerned about those mm-hmm. deadlines. Because what you want to do as a parent is train them that when those things happen, that's not how they respond.
Right.
And it's too late once they've responded that way.
Yeah.
You can just make it worse by saying, you responded badly.
Right. Right.
But it's the long view as a parent, trying to help guide them and shape their responses and their emotions. And,
Yeah.
You know, make a note to work on it next.
Exactly. Before they get to that point. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I remember my parents were really like, none of this is going to matter when you're older. You're not going to care about this later. And I remember as a teenager saying to my mom, like, that's all well and good, but right now I'm in it. So that doesn't help me right now.
Exactly.
Yeah. She would say, like, okay, this is not, and it was like some big breakup, drama, whatever it was. I can't remember the details, but I remember being devastated and like sobbing, like, you're going to, this is all not going to matter in 10 years. It's like, okay, what do I do today then? Because I have to go to school tomorrow, and it matters tomorrow.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think later when I was doing youth ministry, like, that came back to me, like, that moment, and that was how I relate to the teens, because even at like 25 already, I was like, oh, this is not that big a deal.
Right, right.
In my head,
because
I know you're going to get out of high school and life's going to be better, but they're in it right now, and I think just remembering, and I'm hoping I remember this when my kids get bigger, please, Lord, like, that in that moment, for that day, that week, it's, they're so in the thick of that emotion, and their emotions are so extreme. Like, they don't have the control over them that we allegedly do.
Right.
I just imagine if you were having stress at work and your kid said, Dad, you're going to have a different job in 10 years.
Right. Spouses, I don't know if you've ever experienced this in your marriage too. Yeah.
Not effective in marriage either.
Not effective there either. Yeah.
I think it all comes down to just honoring where your child is.
That's a great word.
Comfortable or conveniently as it is, is respecting where they are, respecting what emotions they're going through or triggers that have set them off. Because, I mean, how many times have we, even as adults, and I'm sorry, this is not as wise, when we're pouring out our hearts about something and our husbands are like trying to fix it. Well, what can I do? I can get her wine, or I can get the flowers, right? I can do this. I'll take care of that bill. You know? And I know that that's a very typical response for a male to want to fix the broken so that she's okay. And I think we do that as parents. We want to fix the broken so that they're okay. They don't want to be fixed. They just want to be where they are and have the permission to be there. Because I have a dramatic son. And it's hard to just let him be dramatic for a few minutes and let him get over it in his own time, because if I force it, it just makes it worse.
That's great.
I don't know. I don't really relate to that, because I've never tried to fix my wife's problems, but I do know the...
Just keep smiling.
So sometimes, like, I don't know what words to say to respond to the emotions that my child is experiencing right then. And I don't know how this, the equivalent of this in a few years or, you know, 10 years down the road is going to be. Sometimes all I know to do is just to sing. Like, we're just going to sing. I'm just going to sing a song. And sometimes he will actually use the song as like the soundtrack to his emotion. And he will like just cry harder. And it's like I'm singing and he's like, ah!
He really does.
I'm like, yeah, let's get in it, son. Come on. I'm like, yeah, I'm just like, this little out of my, you know, it's like, and I don't know any other way to relate to where they're at than just to come in with it, to just, and so I don't know what the equivalent of that is, but I know that that gets to the end of it faster than anything else that I do. Not even distraction, like not even saying, oh, but look over here, this is fun, remember we're going to do this tomorrow, like that doesn't help near as much as just saying, like, let me get in this with you. Cause let's get dirty together. I'm gonna feel it. I wanna meet you there.
Because, I mean, now we're gonna get real passionate. But because that's what Christ did for us.
Amen.
Because that is the gospel. Mm. That God didn't stay far away in heaven and say, I'm sorry you guys have this problem. He said, I'm gonna come enter into this broken world with you. I'm gonna come be in it with you and experience and literally take on all of that sin for you. That is what we are privileged to live out as parents and as ministers of the gospel in the world around us, in every relationship that we're in. That we have this example in Jesus Christ who said, you guys are in a really crappy scenario. I'm going to come be in that crappy scenario too. And I'm going to be next to you in it. gosh, John 1:14 is probably my favorite verse. It says that, and that now I'm going to only think of it in German.
Say it in German.
But essentially, when it said, God put on flesh, and the Message version says, and moved into the neighborhood. I always kind of love that. And became one of us. But yeah, that is the essence of everything that we do. And that's, so yeah. Yeah.
So I have a question. When it comes to the multiple identities, and then you also have the big peer pressure situation, how do you help them find out who they are and encourage them to be strong in what they believe and their morals, you know, despite these pressures and things like that, when they're still trying to find their way? And, you know, are you supposed to not embrace, but be okay with some of their inconsistencies? You know, how do you deal with that?
Good question.
That's a great question.
It's a really good question. Here's what I would say. Understanding our limits as parents, because our teens have access to bodies that can do stuff and cars that can drive them places outside of our control and purview and that sort of thing. We do have to accept that we have a lack of control in some ways. Other than imprisoning our children in their room, you know, that's kind of where we are. But I do think to the degree that it is appropriate, we set boundaries. Because all adolescents and all children truly feel safer and more loved when there's clarity on what's in bounds and what's out of bounds. And not that, like, so you set the parameters of like, what they can do, and then you have the clear, like, okay, you may have the ability physically to overstep that boundary that I've set for you, and here's what's going to be the consequences for it. Not an emotional consequence, like, this is just black and white, clear as day, this is the letter of the law. If this happens, this is the consequence. With, like, and this needs to be a consequence that's, like, reasonable. You know, like, it's something that I can actually follow through on. It's not a threat. Like, it's just, if this happens, this is what's going to be the consequence of that. And I know that feels like, when I'm thinking about, like, my daughter getting pregnant, that doesn't seem like very comforting news. Just be like, that's the most effective thing that I can do in many ways. Because I don't want to acknowledge the fact that I can't control all those situations and scenarios. But that kind of goes back to the degree that your voice of wisdom of like, hey, this is no good for you, and it will hurt you, and it will cost you something in the future. Me as a parent can't have near the strength and authority in that for a lot of different reasons, but other, if we can find other adults that are singing that same song, and that our kids can look at them and say, like, I know that you wouldn't tell me that just because you need me to behave well for you. Or that I'm not going to be an inconvenience for you, I'm not going to cause trouble for you, or I'm not going to make you as a parent look bad, then it can make that lesson in that time as they're trying to still figure out who am I, a little more solid, a little more anchored.
Yeah, and I think as well that just being a, sure, yeah. Being an open space where kids are free to talk to you. Where kids can be honest with you, creating that open space that we make sure we're not pressuring them to answer me in a certain way because they know that's what we want to hear, that they really have the freedom to be honest with us and that we're willing to walk with them in that and love them where they are, I think is one of the most effective things that we can do.
You guys need to do a podcast.
My sister-in-law is convinced that we're going to do it.
Really?
Maybe we will. Maybe one day. Okay, this is all new. I don't know. Well, thanks.
Yeah, I haven't figured out how to.
We don't know how to do those.
I log onto my email.
Well, we recorded this one. So
well, good.
There you go. Number one.
Yeah, we'll have that one online. And you guys next week, you know, it's going to be after church lunch. And it's going to be here at the church somewhere. We're not exactly sure where.
There's a room reserved.
Yeah.
I'm not sure
where
it is.
We'll find out where it is. But that's going to be next week. So if you want to hang out with them and hear more about their ministry, definitely check that out. Thank you guys so much. Really, so much.
My pleasure.
Yeah,
thanks
so much.
For talking
we can stay for an hour easily. Let me pray for us. And then some people have to go serve in children's ministry, so I have to let you go. Lord, thank you for... thank you for our children. Thank you for the teenagers that Ryan and Emily are able to impact through their teams and that you are moving in their hearts. And Lord, we just pray that Lord, that this time is just encouraging and challenging, even though it's a little terrifying for me thinking about my kids. But it's such good stuff. Well, thank you for how you love us. Thank you, as Emily reminds us, that Jesus, you stepped into this broken world, and that's what we want to do with our kids. We want to be in it with them because that's what you did for us. And we just thank you and we love you. We pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.